Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdrastuytse. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Grand Rising. And thank you all for joining us this Thursday morning on The Female Solution. I'm Naima Latif. And as always, we appreciate you. And if you are listening online and want to join this conversation, you can give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak so that we may open your mic and get your thoughts. Today, we are addressing an issue that came up on our Wednesday show. As we talked about a very painful situation with a family in which there was an accusation of sexual misconduct on the part of a live-in boyfriend. And as the Department of Children and Family Services go through the process of investigation, the mother must then evaluate a lot of things. One being just how trustworthy is this man that she brought into her home and exposed to her children, and what is the truthfulness of the daughter that's making the accusation. The idea that someone would be untruthful about such a monumental thing as sexual assault of any kind, it triggers a lot of intense responses from women, many of whom have had the experience of having a mother's boyfriend or even an uncle or some other male person that was trusted by adults to assault them, and then to not be believed when they finally get the courage to tell what happened. So we want to examine this and talk about this because we are making choices that affect lives. And when we are single mothers and we have daughters or even sons, because men have told stories of sexual assault as children as well, when you have children and you're a single mother, the person that you trust to be around your children must be of impeccable character. But how can you determine that? And do you have the ability to detect something such as a tendency to be a sexual predator? Are there signs? And how do you respond if your children don't like the person that you are dating? Children often have an instinct about things. And when they don't like someone, sometimes it's because they wish you and their father would get back together, and they resent the fact that there was a breakup. And sometimes they are detecting something that you might not see in that person that you're dating. And because maybe that person gives you some financial security or just raises your self-esteem by being your companion and encouraging you, maybe you don't see other things that your children see. So how do you respond when they don't like a man that you're dating? And then there are women who choose to bring the man into the home, and they've got the live-in boyfriend. Well, a boyfriend is not the same as a husband. And understanding the dynamics of this is critical. Because one who has pledged to be a part of your family has made a different level of commitment to you and the family. And so the relationship is that of father to your children, whether or not they formally or legally adopt them, but as your husband, they have made this spiritual commitment. And the legal commitment, of course, gives other responsibilities as well as rights and privileges. But when they are the boyfriend and they're living in your home with your children, that creates another dynamic. And there are countless number of cases of boyfriends who sexually assault the children. So how do we handle that? And how do we determine at what point a man has proven himself worthy to be exposed to our children? Usually when you bring somebody home to the family, that's somebody you're serious about, somebody that you're looking at possibly having a part of your future. When you don't bring them home, that means, I'm not really quite sure. We'll keep our activities separate and private, but I don't want you around my children. I don't know you like that yet. I don't trust you like that yet. So that makes a statement when you don't feel that your children need to know them yet on that level. But when you make that choice, you're also choosing to expose your children to whatever behaviors the man in your life is expressing. That includes language that he uses. That includes habits that he has. That includes the way he even talks to you and treats you. Because the way he treats you is reflecting how you value yourself. If you are allowing treatment that is less than respectful. So there are all kinds of messages you give to your children by who you choose to bring into your life when you are a single female with children. And so we invite those who may have had that experience or might be in that experience right now. Maybe you are no longer with the father of your children, whether there was a breakup or there was a divorce or whether there was a death. You find yourself now a single mother, still wanting to have a social life, still wanting to have a romantic partner. At what point do you bring that person into the lives of your children, and under what circumstances, and what conversations do you have with your children about it, and how do you address it if they don't care for this person that you have chosen to bring into your life? Do you ignore their feelings? And if you choose to cohabitate with someone who is still at the status of boyfriend and not husband, what authority does that person have over your children? And what happens if they reject the idea of this person having authority over them? How do you handle that? So we want you to call in 515-605-9325. And press 1 to let us know you'd like to comment on this issue. It is a very common situation that we find ourselves in. And women who have particularly young children have to really be conscious of the people they expose their children to. And the messages that they are giving their children, if they're dating multiple men or a succession of men, and if the relationships are not harmonious, what messages are they giving to their children about relationships? Well, we want you to call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1. And, of course, if you are joining us live on Facebook, feel free to write in your comments. We will share them with our listening audience. And Tracy Cobb is sharing her thoughts. She says, "Grand Rising, it's a super conscious decision that affects everyone in this relationship. Make sure that this new man respects you totally. Gradually bring him around the children, young teenagers, and adult children. It's a feel yourself around the vibes from your children and his vibes toward the children." And this is a thought shared by Tracy Cobb. Thank you, Tracy. We appreciate that. And I do believe that vibes, I mean, that is your, that is the spiritual communication system that we all have, the vibrations that we emit, what we project from the soul. And if somebody says, I got bad vibes from him, you really have to listen to that, because that is something that's not fakeable to say. If someone doesn't feel good around you, they're sensing perhaps negative emotions, maybe even hostility or resentment. And when your children don't get good vibes from someone you're seeing, you do have to pay attention to their feelings and not just dismiss it like, oh, you just don't want me to see anybody. Oh, you think I should be back with your father, or that relationship is over. Yeah, that might be well and good, but sometimes their vibes can be an early warning signal to you, because you might be blinded by, you know, maybe the person's good looks, maybe their money, maybe their status, their position. Maybe your friends hooked you up and they recommended him because, you know, they like him, you know, and that's fine. He might be a good friend to them. He might be good at his job that he does. He might have high status in the community. But your children might feel that he's not sincere toward you. And maybe his intentions towards you isn't as wholesome as you might want it to be. And maybe they're feeling this. Or maybe they're just feeling that he doesn't particularly care for them. Not every man can step into the role of stepfather. And sometimes men would just assume you get rid of those children some kind of way, push them off on somebody else. They don't really want them in their midst. They don't want to have to pretend that they like your children. And children feel that. They know when someone really doesn't want them around. So you need to really listen to their feelings. Well, let's go to our phone lines and get your comments. And if you are listening online, we want to hear from you. If you have thoughts, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 so we know you have something to say. And if you're on, if you're watching us on Facebook, feel free to share your comments. Write them in, and we will share them with our listening audience. When should a single mom bring a man around her children? Well, let's go to area code 863. I believe we've got our friend L.A. from Florida. Friend, yes. Rising.
Grand Rising. Well, real quick, my personal thing is and then I've heard this from some of my female friends too. If you have children that are still at home, date, but keep it on a super down low. Don't bring them to the house. Don't introduce them to the kids. Y'all just make a date and rendezvous somewhere. That's one option. Of course, if the children have left the nest, then you can essentially do what you want to do. I recently told a friend of mine, male, but I guess it could apply to female friends too. I basically told him, think long range. In other words, and this could go male or female, if you get sick, okay, will their kids, you got to think about 20 or 30 years out on this one, will their children take care of you? And the reason why I told him that, if he got sick, is because he was in a relationship for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't work out. And I said, basically she gave you a solid, because I asked him a question. I said, she had two sons. Would either of her sons take care of you if you got sick? And I don't think a lot of people look at that, because eventually, not all people, but many people do get sick when they get older.
Yeah.
So will the other person's children. And like I said, she had the two sons when they got together. They were together for 17 years. That's a long time.
A long time. I mean, you can't say the relationship didn't work. It worked for 17 years. It ended after 17 years, but it was working for 17 years if they stayed together that long.
Right. So he's like in early 60s. So I said, well, because he was, you know, he didn't really accept the breakup right away. But I said, you got to look at it this way. I said, well, and he couldn't answer the question. He couldn't say with a definitive yes that either one of those two guys, well, they're grown men now, would take care of him if he got sick or needed some type of help. Because I'm looking at, in the purest sense of the word, Social Security really comes from your family.
That
includes taking care of people if they get sick, down on their luck. Good times is bad times, like, so that's what I told them. Anyway, those are my comments.
Well, I think that really raises a major question, because if you're with someone for a number of years and they have children, was there a sense that you were part of the family, or did they just look at you, well, that's just, you know, mom's boyfriend? But as you say, if you get sick, do they feel an obligation toward you as your children, as you, their father figure, to be responsible for you? Or, you know, once the relationship was over, it's like, okay, well, hey, you know, they're done. We're done with him too. You know, next. I mean, that's something.
And you know what? And that was his historically, because I told, see, before he got into the relationship, she had other visible boyfriends, including live-in. So when he came along, he was just another number. Now, they were together 17 years. Like, that's a long time. But he couldn't answer that question, because I asked him, I said, would either one of those two take care of you if you got sick or incapacitated? And he couldn't answer that question. I said, well, then she did you a solid. Go out here and find somebody that you can start fresh with and build with. So those, you know. A lot of people just don't think long range. They think about the benefits now, but they don't think about, you know, what if the relationship goes long enough, somebody, just through the law of averages and the human body being what it is, will get sick.
That's true. That's true. And I think that's why we see a lot of seniors, unfortunately, that end up alone in these nursing homes. Nobody comes to see about them. You know, well, where's your family? But if you didn't connect with a family with children that feel obligated to care about you, then when you do get sick, you have no one. And
right.
I see that a lot. And I think when people get into relationships and they're long-term and they're not solidified with some type of a legal tie, then there is no emotional feeling of responsibility from the children. It might not be even if you marry a person. The children still might feel like, well, hey, you know, you're not my mother, you're not my father. You know, so, I mean, it's about the relationship. And if you didn't build a relationship where they feel like you are our family, they're not going to care about you if you get sick. And people got to look at that. What relationship have we really built? Am I just a financial convenience? Or do they really feel, pardon me, do they really feel an obligation to me as a part of the family where if I get sick, if I'm down on my luck, you know, they feel like they, you know, obligated to help me out? Or would they just kick me to the curb because, you know, I'm in the way now. I'm not good for anything. You know, he's a burden.
Right.
Well, people need to think about that. They don't think about that when they're healthy because they don't see the future. But 10 years down the road, if you're in your 50s or 60s now, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, what do you think your life with this person is going to look like? Are you still going to be, you know, one of many boyfriends, one of many girlfriends? if you get sick, will their children care for you? If they get sick, you know, if you have children, would your children care for them? But I definitely think that's something that middle-aged people who are dating with children from a previous relationship should think about. What happens when they reach that stage in their elder years where they may need help, and have they built the kind of relationship that the person that they've been in this maybe long-term relationship with, you know, 5-10 years with, is there a sense of family and responsibility?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes. Well, thank you for that thought. We certainly appreciate that. And, of course, we invite you all to respond. What do you think? If you've been in a relationship with someone for a number of years and they have children, should their children feel obligated to take care of you if you become ill? And even if you break up, do you still maintain some type of a tie with their children if you bonded with their children? Or should you sever that tie? What do you think about that, Ellie? If a man bonds with a woman's children, you know, really feels fatherly toward them, because I've seen that happen. I've seen where somebody might really develop a relationship with a woman's children, and then there's a breakup. And the children, you know, they don't feel like they broke up, but, you know, the mother broke up with the person. And it's kind of devastating to them. So, you know, should you maintain that tie if it's been
over? Well, that can happen. From my personal observations, that bond might be created if the person was introduced to that child at a very young age.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure there's some exceptions or across the spectrum, but like in the case of my friend, let's see, she had one child that was probably in middle school, junior high, 13, 14 years old. Another one's probably about 15 or 16. But, like I said, by the time he got into the situation, she had already had other visible boyfriends. At least one before him was a live-in. So when he came in, he was just another number.
Mm.
So although he, you know, he helped out where he could, you know, picking him up at school and all that type of stuff. There was no, what I would call, even he would call a real, no kind of bond where if a person got sick or whatever, you know, where they would help him out. Now, he didn't get sick, I mean, or nothing like that, but I just told him, I said, what if? He couldn't answer that question.
Well, I guess you probably made him think, and he probably realized that he couldn't be sure, and probably the answer might have been very painful, but the answer probably was no. And I think when you really think about it, if people had to ask themselves that question, if I got sick, would my girlfriend's children take care of me? 9 times out of 10, that answer would probably be no, just based on the fact that they haven't built up that sense of obligation.
Yeah, and that takes time, because we're talking about when a person gets sick, and it's not even hospital sick, but let's say they get bedridden. If you got to bring in nurses or caregivers or whatever, that can be expensive. Then, you know, taxing on, you know, mentally, to say the least. You know, it's just like if you, well, you're a parent. You know, nobody can take care of your baby better than you can. So that's the same thing when it comes to those type of relationships. So, and then but if they're adult children, they might have their own family. Then you're talking about then there are other factors involved. They might
right.
not have the time, money, or they might be with a spouse or a mate that says,
right.
no, you take care. You need to take care of home before you, you know, worry about your parents. And some people probably even throw scripture into it, you know, when a, you know, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's something that I think most people don't think about. But it's, you know, it's, I would say if a person's even, you know what, with any age, if you have children and you're dating, they can be 21 years old. I think they really need to factor that in.
Right, right. And I think when you get involved with somebody who has children that are already grown, it's less likely that you're going to develop that bond, like you said. I think it happens when they're younger, maybe you help to raise them. But if they're already, like, you know, past puberty, it more than likely isn't going to happen in that same manner unless
I know of a case where the mother had a stroke. Now, she had – their mother was married. They had a – well, interesting relationship. They were married, but – they could date who they wanted to date. They had one of those several open relationships.
Yeah, an open marriage, as they call it
right.
now.
Right, exactly. All right. Now, when the mother had a stroke, the two daughters, what they did was they had a chat with the boyfriend, and basically they kicked him out of her life.
Ooh.
Including the car and all of it.
Wow.
And they took over and... You know, but they, you know, that's, but they were grown when they got together. So like I said, a lot of people don't think about these things. They don't think long range.
They don't think long range. Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about that, because when you date someone whose children are grown, that is a different dynamic than when you're dating somebody who has children that you might be even helping to raise. And the grown children can have a certain level of authority over the life of a parent. And what happens if they get sick? You know, can their grown children put you out of the life? Like, hey, you're not ready to take responsibility, so you need to just leave. That's pretty deep. Well, we're going to come back and talk more about that. When should a single mom bring a man around her children? This is a critical point, because so many things happen. And how do you decide what level of trust you're going to give to someone who is not officially your husband, maybe not ever going to be your husband, but is certainly a companion in your life? What do you do in these situations? Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back, and if you're listening online, we want you to join this conversation. Give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 so we know you have something to say. If you're on our switchboard now, press 1 if you want to join this conversation. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And we'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is a result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Susan Essentials doesn't do it any other way. Susan Essentials provides your employees and individuals access to over 20,000 nutritional products, and they are shipped direct to your door. Because Susan Essentials is certified in plant-based healing, we're permitted to offer you the best nutritional supplements on the planet. They're non-GMO and sustainably produced, and we take the guesswork out for you. Let Susan Essentials help you take control of your health today.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
Susan Essentials is re-engineering what health looks like by leading you to the best wellness initiatives in the world. Start your coaching plan today and create a new paradigm of health. Click here to learn more.
If you're on our switchboard now, press 1. and give us your thoughts. We live in a society where people are going through multiple relationships. Marriage, unfortunately, has become an institution that is not as long-lasting as previously expected. People make vows to be together forever, and, you know, they're lucky if they get a good 5 years in before they split. The divorce rate among many communities is as high as 70%. Some people are choosing not to ever marry, but may have multiple relationships with children by multiple fathers. So marriage in itself does not necessarily guarantee lifelong stability. It's a legal tie that sometimes merely makes it more difficult to dissolve the tie. And some people, after several legal ties, choose not to have another legal tie with the belief that perhaps this isn't going to last and I don't want to have to pay a lawyer and go to court to get out of this relationship. So they do all the things that a married couple does. They cohabitate, they buy cars together, they buy furniture together, they buy appliances together, and there are children in the household, but there's not a legal tie. And so this can get complicated if perhaps the live-in boyfriend gets ill and maybe there's a need for some assistance. Would the children feel obligated to someone who has been in the capacity of companion to their mother but is not their legal father and may or may not have bonded with them as a father, particularly if the children are grown and have started families themselves? So, L.A., you've presented a very interesting point of view because people are living into their senior years. They are developing relationships, and they are going through the process of aging, and they are sometimes needing assistance. And I've just in this past week have talked to a number of families where there was an elderly parent who needed help, and the children had to decide who among us is going to bring them into their home because whoever they live with is going to be disruptive. And this was a blood relative. And children were like hesitating, well, nah, see, I got my children. Well, you know, we going through this. Well, I don't have space. So you can imagine if someone is not a blood relative, not a legal member of the family in terms of, you know, vows, paperwork, you know, the state knowing that there's some people responsible and, you know, eligible even to receive some inheritance or whatever. They're just the companion. Do they get the same consideration if they get ill? So we want you to give us your thoughts. This is something that has to be looked at because our communities are often disrupted by illness. And when we see a homeless population increasing, we see a population in senior care facilities increasing. And the question is always, where is your family? And you mean there's nobody that will step up and care for you in your senior years? Who did you develop a relationship with that feels responsible for you? When I see people rolling down the expressway in wheelchairs begging and, you know, legs cut off, my thought is, you mean there's nobody in your family that will take care of you now that you have become disabled and you're out here on the street in the cold with a cup asking for money? Where is your family? So, like LA said, you know, Social Security is, it's your relationships. That's your social security. The people that you have ties with. So are you forming ties with people who feel responsible for you? Are you forming ties with people whose children see you as a parent that they would take care of if you became ill? What about Alzheimer's? That's a illness that there's a progression. And the first stages of it is, you know, mild forgetfulness, and then that forgetfulness increases, and then, you know, it becomes disruptive kinds of forgetfulness. Then it becomes delusionary, and then the person could easily get lost or harm themselves, accidentally burn up the house because they forgot they got a pot on the stove, and, you know, they forgot, and they put a pot holder on the stove, it's made of cloth, and the fire catches fire to the pot holder and starts to burn up the walls, and the house is on fire, and they're in there by themselves, and they forgot. Things happen. So if you are a person in a relationship with someone and they are at the stages where, you know, the effects of aging could be manifesting, are they in a relationship where other family members see them as a responsibility that should be taken on? Or would they be considered a burden that needs to be put out if they become ill? I've seen that happen as well in the situation that LA described. I've seen that happen where, and this was a younger couple even. I think they were in their 30s. And the man was, you know, live-in boyfriend. The woman had children. I think the children were teenage and early 20s, maybe. But this couple, they were in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s, and she died. And her family made him leave the home. And he didn't have a place to go, and he ended up homeless for a time, struggling, because, you know, they didn't see him as part of the family. They saw him as her boyfriend. And when she died, he apparently hadn't been in the family or part of the child raising enough years for them to feel like, well, this is our father. And so the family was like, okay, we need to take care of these children. They're still a minor age. I don't think any of the children were over 18. So, but they were at the age where, you know, in high school, plan to go to college. Well, you know, he's not at a stage where he's going to be the one that's responsible for them. He needs to leave the house. We need to, you know, take over their lives. And that ended up being a bit of a mess. So we can preach, oh, you should marry and blah, 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 blah. But the marriage isn't the issue totally, because simply being married doesn't necessarily emotionally obligate people to you. It may say legally the decisions your spouse can make, but it doesn't bond emotionally someone's children to you unless you have created that relationship. And sometimes having a step-parent creates a resentment if the children didn't accept that person in your life. So simply marrying them doesn't mean your children are going to fulfill an obligation to them should they become ill, should you pass away. So what kind of relationships are we building when we have children and we bring someone into our lives? What do we expect our children to do in case that person needs help? What do we expect our children to continue on if we should pass away before that person, especially if they're living in the home? People are cohabitating because of financial needs, financial reasons, financial support, and they may not make it a legal tie, but they have financial ties. What emotional ties should you have to someone's children? And does it depend on what age the children may be? And if the children are teenage, are the dynamics different than if the children are of primary age, maybe, you know, pre-puberty? And is it another set of dynamics if the children are grown with families of their own? And how do you handle it if the children don't particularly want you in their mother's life? Does she ignore their feelings if they say, I don't get good vibes from this guy? Do you end a relationship with a person if their children are not in approval of you being in their life? Or do you just decide to keep your relationship separate from their children so that their children's opinions don't matter? So these are the issues we have to look at as we, with our aging population, people are maintaining personal relationships, people are cohabitating, people are passing away without legal documentation as to what should happen with their possessions that they may have jointly purchased. Sometimes there are still ties to a previous spouse in terms of ownership of property, and these are things that aren't talked about while everybody is of sound mind, as you should be when you, you know, create a will. Many people are passing away without a will, and they've got multiple relationships where they've got multiple ties, multiple children, what children are entitled to what thing, and does a live-in partner have the ability to recover any possible rights to property if you pass away and your relationship was not legally bound in which your rights are defined? So all of these things can come up, especially if you have a relationship that has extended over a period of years. Now, one of the things that came up in yesterday's conversation had to do with an accusation of sexual impropriety that the teenage daughter said happened 8 years ago while the boyfriend was there in the house. But his contention is that could never have happened. There were so many other people around. When could that have happened? So he's still now under investigation. However, he's had to leave the house. He left the house. Of course, naturally, the atmosphere was not one where he could stay if you're being accused of that. But how might that situation not have evolved to that point? How, if he truly, you know, if he's innocent of the charges, what could he have done to prevent that situation from developing as it has developed, in which his credibility has been destroyed, and his trust, the family members, other family do not trust him around the children. It's a relationship, of course, it's definitely a very difficult one to have if someone's child is saying you touched them inappropriately while they were a younger child. How do you ever mend that? Is that even mendable? So what might he have done as someone dating a woman with children to protect himself from that having happened? And when you choose to move into the home with someone or they move into your home with their children. You're cohabitating with someone who has children that are not yours. What ways do you protect yourself from that kind of a situation? Especially if your relationship with the children is not necessarily one in which they desire you to be in the life of their mother. Maybe there's hostility, maybe there's resentment, maybe they don't feel you have a right to be there. How do you handle that? So we invite you to give your comments on that and share your testimony if you have perhaps been in that situation and had to make some choices about whether or not you should be involved with someone who is still raising children in the home and you're wanting to cohabitate, but you're not, for whatever emotional reasons, willing to make it a marital commitment. And I think that's where a lot of our issues arise, this gray area of a relationship where you don't have the legal rights or responsibilities as a spouse, but you have the emotional ties, and maybe the other person is still sort of dating some other people, so it's still not clear, are you the one, are you in the family, are you just, you know, the flavor of the month, so to speak, and, you know, how seriously are your children taking this person if they're not the only person in your life? They just tolerate them when they're around. And in that environment, can you ever develop the respect of someone's children if they don't see you as a permanent fixture in their lives, but just merely, you know, someone that their mother is seeing? So how do you protect yourself if you are feeling that you could be accused? And should you ever put yourself in a position where you are alone with someone's children? Because, you know, this has happened often. Again, someone has a boyfriend babysit their children because they got to go to work, he's at the house, or whatever the case may be. An accusation is made. You know, these things happen often, too often. And there have been many women who have come forward with testimonies that they told their mother that they were being touched inappropriately by the boyfriend, and the mother didn't want to believe them because the mother wanted to hold on to the boyfriend because he was providing whatever emotional, financial, whatever support he was providing. She chose to hold on to him even after being told by the child that things were happening that shouldn't be happening. And there are a lot of women that are emotionally scarred by this to this day. And the relationship with their mothers, of course, is wrecked, because how can you ever forgive your mother for taking the boyfriend's side rather than the child's side? So there's a feeling of betrayal, and that's a relationship that just probably, it's very difficult to ever heal. And there's too much of that happening. Too many times women are trusting men with their children and not seeing signs that not everything is right, and choosing the relationship. There was I saw a recent video of Yanla Van Zandt. She said she thought she would never choose a man over her children. She realized she had, because she stayed too long in an abusive relationship. And many women with emotional needs will choose to ignore signs that things are not right and will stay in a relationship even though their children are begging them to let that person go. And there have been many cases where the daughter will tell the mother that she has been molested by the boyfriend, and the mother will get angry at the daughter, accuse the daughter of seducing or trying to seduce them. And I mean, I've known people who have endured that. And there is so much anger. And it's a mother-daughter relationship that just does not ever heal because the sense of betrayal is so great. And yet, women who are in relationships with men that they don't want to let go of will choose to not believe the daughter. There have been daughters that have been put out of the house because they said, you know, the boyfriend tried to touch them, all kinds of things. So there's a lot of dysfunction around that mother with a boyfriend who has children situation. And too many women are not listening to the vibes that their children say they're getting from this person, or the anger that the children are displaying toward this person, or the resentment that the children have. And this is not to demonize or criminalize men. I'm saying that there are things a man should do that would prevent him from being put in a position of being accused of wrongdoing. And there is a relationship that he should consider building if he's going to be involved with a woman who has children, because the children are a part of who she is, even if they're older, even if they're teenage. And that teenage stage is a critical stage, especially if she's got teenage daughters. That's a critical stage, and men have to be sensitive to the dynamics of a family in which the father of the children is not there, or is there in a very limited capacity. And I think too many people don't explore what happened in the previous relationship, the reason why it's over, and how that might be affecting the children, what emotional stage they might be in because of that relationship. So we have to really take a look at that and understand what it is that affects a relationship when there are children involved. And certainly if we are not conscious of the impact of the breakup, whether it's a divorce, a death, you know, a marriage that never happened, and ties that are still there, these things have to be discussed. So we're going to take another break. And, of course, we want you to give us your thoughts regarding what should a man do if he is entering a relationship with a woman who has teenage children and they may not be amenable to establishing a kind of father-son or father-daughter relationship with the mother's boyfriend, and yet he wants to maintain a relationship with the mother? How does he deal with their lack of enthusiasm of his presence? I'm going to take your calls after this quick break, and if you're listening online, we want you to join this conversation. Give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1. And we will be right back in just a quick moment.
Hallelujah, greetings in the spirit of Wayo and Yah Shalom. Wayo means we are one. Yah is Hebrew sacred name for God, and Shalom means peace. I'm Evangel Mamadi Love Yah Nubian, and I'm inviting you to join me every fourth Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Wisdom with Mamadi. Call in number 515-605-9325. 515-605-9325. Wisdom, Women in Support of Daughters on Motherhood Preparation. And spiritually speaking, men who do the will of Yah are mothers too. As a Montessori educator, author, activist, international award-winning poet, and ordained minister, females, I want you to say farewell to all things seen and unseen that prevent your potential. You bring forth life and give birth to babies. A kid is an animal beast with four legs. A child is a human being person with two legs. Facts can change feelings, but feelings cannot change facts. A mother teaches love. Love is the arm that reaches out and holds people, places, and things together. That's what Wisdom with Mama D is about. Join me every fourth Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Call in 515-605-9325 to share your wisdom and love souls into shape. Remember, mother's farewell. If you don't, your child won't. And if he doesn't, society is abused. Females, you are global transformers with the power to change this world. Use it.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
This is Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, spiritual counselor and advisor. I invite you to a private reading in the areas of business, health, finances, relationships. My introductory cost of $20. Please call because there is a higher power that can help me help you. 312-802-4743. Peace and blessings to you all. Call me.
312-802-4743. And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and Grand Rising to Viata joined us on Facebook Live. Thank you for joining us. This is an interesting topic. Yes, we are talking about when should a single mom bring a man around her children. And we're going to go to our phone lines and get your thoughts. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 so we know you have something to say. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And let's go to 773-977. I believe we've got our dear sister Lois on the line, Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution.
Grand Rising, good morning to all. It's a blessing to still be alive. And this topic today is so, so important. I implore everyone to watch the movie In the Basement. In the Basement.
In the Basement.
There was a father who took his daughter, who became 18 years old, and, she had about five kids by him in the basement. The mother didn't know where she was for years, almost 20 years, this father did. So I'm not going to talk too much about it, but everybody should watch the movie In the Basement. And I do recall years ago there was a young man about 21, 22 years old who actually raped a three-year-old baby, went into her butt and made a performance.
And
what they did, they only gave this man 5 years in jail for what he did to this child. He got out and did it again to somebody else's daughter. Then when he got out of that one, he went in for someone else's son. He raped a boy. And so he's in jail as we speak because of his repeated sexual abuse to children. So I feel that when a woman meets a man and they have especially a daughter, but nowadays even a son, sitting the baby on their laps and letting them play with the babies and what have you, because sometimes these no good men will threaten these babies and tell them, if you tell what's going on, I'm going to kill your mama and everybody in your family, and they don't tell what's going on. So I just suggest whenever a child brings this to your attention, listen to them. Separate them from that dog right away. That's my opinion. And I thank God that it never happened to me. And my children were always aware, you know, of what to do if something should happen to them. Like, you know, swing on those testicles. Don't let go. Just squeeze them, swing and what have you. And get a knife, try to cut them or something. You know, we have to teach our children how to defend themselves or try at least. So that's my opinion about this subject today. But everyone should really look at that movie, In the Basement. In the Basement.
Where can they get that movie? Is that on Netflix or where is that?
Well, it should be on Netflix. Yes, it should be on Netflix. I had I received it from someone who was just selling DVDs on the street, In the Basement. So I just implore everyone, just check out In the Basement. That is really a wonderful movie, and it should teach a lot of mothers what they should do when things like that happen.
Well, thank you, Lois. I will Google that and definitely take a look at that wherever it is shown. The movie's called In the Basement. You know, the horrible thing about this is that regardless of what happens, once an accusation is made, it's almost as everybody's life is ruined at that point. The child's life is ruined simply because they got to go through the trauma, and the system creates more trauma by even in their investigation, they're asking, they're questioning. So if the child is telling the truth, they're tending to be treated like they're a liar, which is further traumatizing. If they are not telling the truth, something did happen to them that would put them at the emotional state where they would even think of saying something like that. So there is some type of emotional damage. And then if the perpetrator, of course, there's somebody who society has decided, look, you got a sickness, we don't want you around people ever. So that means you got to register as a sex offender wherever you live, certain places you can't live. Your life is ruined. And it's obviously somebody who does have a sickness that needs help, but right now society doesn't seem to know how to treat a sickness such as sexual, I don't know if you call it deviancy, whatever, sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, something that has happened that probably has traumatized the person and now they're reenacting it, but society doesn't seem to know how to treat that illness. And so the person you will always have it, therefore we have to keep you away from society forever.
Well, what they're doing nowadays, they're turning the children over to DCFS, Children and Family Services, and if they weren't raped in the home, they will be raped in the facility that they placed them at. I've had several women who were foster children to tell me how the foster mother would, you know, let them, make them lay on the couch, and the foster father would have sex, and he would bring friends in, and they would have sex with this 12-year-old girl and what have you. And when the social worker came by the house, they never, you know, took them off to themselves to talk to them to find out what was going on. They always talked to them in front of the foster parent. So most of them who are going into some of the Children and Family Service departments, they're being molested. One lady told me that the director of one of these facilities, I forgot the name of it, but anyway, she said that the director, you know, would take her in the basement, and he told her, no sense of you telling anybody because nobody's going to believe you. So when she became 16, she said she just jumped over the fence and left. She found a way out of there. But the state is not being supportive of our children. Our children are being abused by the system. So if the mother is any kind of decent mother and a child brings that to your attention, someone fondled me and someone raped me or kissed me, whatever, the mother should beware from that point on. And I feel they should believe the child, especially a baby. How could a baby make up something like that, you know? So.
Right.
We don't know. Like you said earlier, though, these women are so hungry for a man, so they will tolerate anything just to say, yes, I have a man. You know, a lot of women will take somebody's husband or boyfriend and take him home and tie him up and call the girlfriend, hey, girl, I got me a man, knowing they got that man tied up in that house just to have a man. So, that's
my thing. You bring up a point, Lois, about what happens when people end up reporting it, and then DCF takes the child, and then they put them in foster care. And unfortunately, we've got a case now. One of our guests that's been on several times, is just his whole life has been a nightmare. His children are grown now, but they've been permanently scarred. They got all kinds of emotional traumas, physical illnesses, because when they were young, they were taken out of the home, put in foster care, abused in foster care, and he's been struggling trying to sue the state. And, of course, it's like all the cases are, I guess, past the point of the statute of limitations. And so he just can't get any relief from the trauma that was caused by his family being torn apart. And I don't say a system does it, because systems are made up of people. They are individuals who themselves have emotional illnesses. They should not be in positions of responsibility, and they themselves also will abuse children. So we are allowing people who are ill to address other people who are ill and create further illness. And all of us are collectively responsible for this. So I agree. We should believe children when they report something, and we should realize that they have been traumatized, and the person who committed the act was somewhere traumatized and also needs help. Just punishing does not fix the problem. So that's something we as a society need to do. Help people who are sick. Don't just punish people and further traumatize them. We have to change how we address it.
Mm-hmm. Well, our society is so, I think it's so warped, whereby the statute of limitation only applies when they want it to apply. For a good example, is Father Flager. You know, Father Flager was accused of something after 40 years, and the statute of limitation is supposed to be a year or 2 years, you know. So Bill Cosby, another example. So they apply the statute when they want to apply the statute. If you can go back 40 years and put somebody in jail or accuse somebody of something after 40 years, no DNA, no nothing but word of mouth, come on. So we don't have any justice.
Definitely not a application of the law. Well, I'm going to bring somebody else into this conversation. Thank you so much, Lois, for your insight.
Thank you for your time.
And we've got Minister Cynthia Marie Williams joining us this morning. Grand Rising, thank you so much for joining us today.
Grand Rising, peace and blessings, Namaste, God, spirit in me, grace and spirit in you. And that was fabulous, Lois. You're right. You've got to make your children aware of the potential for that. Now, one of the things for me, being sexually abused horribly by my father, and through the grace of God, he didn't impregnate me. I'd never seen that before, whatever that was. Later, what it was, and it hurt me when he tried to have intercourse with me. Now, the verbal and abuse and all that went with it, and my mother not being there for me. It, like I said, as you guys know, for me, historically, only through the grace of God did I not have a mental breakdown and all that kind of stuff. But I grew to develop forgiveness for both of them because I knew, because Spirit said to me to forgive them. Jesus said, I'll say that in my prayers. Because I found out as I got older, they had went through some trauma, especially my father. He was a sexual pervert, a child abuser. And as I grew older and had a mentor, a social worker, she asked me, did I want to be a sex therapist? I said no, because I knew that I would not want to bring up anything inside of me. I've already grown throughout it. But here's the point. I've been married four times. I had a daughter. Not one of those guys raped her, touched her in any way, because what I would do, because I know my own experience had grown through it, and I would meet the man, and I would listen to him. We don't listen because the signs are right there. We don't pay attention to the history of where these men have been and what they have done historically in regards to children. But we just want a man, and that's the whole thing. We want a man, so we go ahead and deal with him, whether we live with him and whether it doesn't matter about the marriage thing. But my daughter at 53, never, 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 she told me, Mama, nobody touched me. Nobody said anything or anything to me. Because then, too, I'm standing there as a protective mom and honestly, openly looking at the situation of my need to have a companion, but growing also without violating the rights of my daughter. So I'm so proud. I'm so proud. I'm so grateful because I gave her to God when I had her. I don't want to have to go through what I went through. And I asked God to help me to parent her. But there you go with that. It's so much spirituality that we don't understand. And so observation as people, when we want to get into relationships, listen, pay attention, don't rush into relationships. And think about what you've gone through if you've been abused, if you want to be married, if you want to have a husband or a man, you want to make sure you don't want your children to go through what you went through. And I love what you just said, Boaz Minister. You really told your children what to do. My daughter, there was never any need for her to be anything other than sweet and protected by me, and I was very strong. I might have told him that threat that we always think about threatening a man with, but they respected me, you know, and this is the whole quality of when we want to have healthy relationships once we grow beyond our own pain and suffering. So that's my work I've been doing for over 50 years. Spiritual advising and counseling, and thank you, Naima, for the commercial that you have for me. Because those who have gone through, I find they're better able to help others. So this is what it is, baby. Yes, it is. Yeah.
So, Minister Cynthia, let me ask you this question. You say that you listen to the men, you know, you talk to them, and you would listen for certain things. What were you listening for? What clues did they give you about their character that would make you feel they were worthy to on your children?
My daughter, I listened to them and how they treated children and how they were treated. Now, I'm not saying they all had good relationships with their mothers. That's another topic. But in regards to how they treated the children, as fathers, stepfathers, within, I found that's what I paid attention to. I paid attention. A lot of times we don't listen to men. Men tell us a lot about themselves, but we don't hear what they're saying. So that's what I learned over the years myself. When I broke through my hatred of my father, I mean real hatred. I wanted to kill him. I mean real kill him. Because I was like a trapped animal. I understand what Lois is saying about the children who go into foster care. It's like, who do you have to help you? Where is your advocate? So in my hatred for my father, which was part of my, I believe, like I know you guys talk about, I talk about my soul journey. I had to grow through that, which I did, and I never did hate my mother. But my mother used me because she was weak and I was strong. So in regards to the men, I listened to hear them talk about how they treated their children around them, but then how they were treated as children. And in listening and paying attention, I could see that they were not, they were, I could see truly, they were not child molesters or abusers. And they never whooped my girl, hell no. Who's my bitch? No, they're not going to put their hand on my daughter. And I treated her not with beatings and whooping, but another thing. I didn't bring in that slave mentality that we got to beat our children. I talked to her. I had a girlfriend who worked with children. She said, Cynthia, get on the floor with her and talk to her and listen to what she's saying. And that's what I did. I gave her respect as a soul, as a human being. I never used my authoritarian, which I did in the sense that we have to parent, but I never used it to abuse her. And when we talk about it now as adults, we'll laugh about some things, not a thing about dreams. Come to find out my mother craved dreams when she was pregnant with me. And that is true, too. It's another thing.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I was just real sensitive. And she said, Mama, you know how you get crazy about if I ate too many of your dreams. But in regards to our relationship, at 53, she is. It is beautiful. We went through 1 year where she did what she did. Attitude-wise, but I found out that I was told, don't treat her like you're, she's a child. Treat her like a woman. And that was, see, I'm always self-aware. I'm always looking at myself. So I stopped treating her like she was my child. She's a grown woman. Treat her as a woman. Treat her with that respect. And that broke open some things. And now, I mean, you know, we really, and she's got three sons. He's got 2, 1, 18, 1, 7. I didn't know he was going to be 17. He's autistic. And she's teaching them qualities of who they should be as men.
That's
and
important.
How to treat women, but not to be abused. And Grandma
that
got
is,
a little bit to go with, too.
Yes. Well, we thank you for sharing that wisdom because it does get passed down to generations, and we can observe how our children, once they become grown, how they raise their children so we'll know what we actually instilled in them and the example that we set. So we thank you, Minister Cynthia, for, as always, being so transparent and willing to share your story so that we can know that if we've been through something, it's not for us to feel bad. It's for us to teach and help others get through it, especially if they've been through some trauma, and too many of us have been through trauma. We're going to take a quick break, and we're coming back. And I got my sister on the line. So we're going to talk to our dear sister at area code 708. Hold on for this last break, and we'll be right back. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live, you want to join this conversation, feel free to write in your comments. We'll share them with our listening audience. And we will be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Naima Latif, and our question today is, when should a single mom bring a man around her children? Well, let me go to our phone lines, and of course, if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, we got about another 20 minutes to go before we wrap up. You can give us a call, 515-605-9325, and if you're on our switchboard now, press 1, and we'll make sure we open your mic and get your comments. And let me go to area code 706-677, my dear sister, my Ika Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us today.
Grand Rising, how are you? And greetings to your listening audience. Yeah, this is such an important topic that really played down. You said something earlier, Naima, about women be needing emotional support or energy. It's really a lot of sexual support that people, women are looking for that causes them to ignore the signs of abusive men. Because within the sex act, emotions evolve. Emotions evolve as you're having sex with a person, basically. But as you know, my daughter was molested by her father. Mm. And it's amazing, you know. She told me recently, she said, you know, I'm really glad, I'm thankful, not glad it happened, but thankful because I have two daughters. And, you know, it's like I know what to look for in a man. They can't. No man can fool me in relationship to where he is sexually. And it's almost like she could smell a man. You know, she could smell a sexual deviant person. But that's no excuse. But one of the things that I think we need to deal with is helping to prepare our children for crisis situations. So it's like, you know, it's true. There are people who will say, if you tell your mother or anybody, I'll kill you. Well, you need to tell your child, tell me anyway.
Yes.
If somebody ever tells you that, you tell me. I'm an adult. I can take care of myself, and I'm going to take care of you. That's important. So that the fear element, your child doesn't have to fear, that they trust you, and that they'll will not a, you know, you don't talk back to the man and say, no, I'm going to tell my mama. No. You just say, okay, you know, and you tell. And you have to trust your children. You have to raise your children to not lie, first of all. Like when my daughter, when I finally came to grips with what my daughter was saying, because at first it was too much for me. It caused me to have a sense of amnesia. I just couldn't take it. And I knew she was telling the truth. I knew she wasn't lying because we didn't raise her to be a liar, you know? So that was important. Also, I have a male friend, and what he says is that he doesn't go to women's houses. He has his own place. And when he meets a woman, she has to come to his house. Mm. And they develop a relationship at his house first. That's where they get to know each other. And then if something serious develops, then they incorporate the children into the relationship. But one of the reasons is because of that. He doesn't, whether she's got children or not, he does not want to give the impression that, or get involved with other people in her life starting off.
Mm.
So those are just some of the things that come to my mind. But there's a great educational process that's needed because pedophilia is on the rise. And I know one of the things, I wish my daughter had heard about this. She could really talk about that. You can't tell who's a pedophile. They come in all shapes, forms, and with all kind of letters behind their names and what have you. It doesn't matter. It's a real problem because we as a people, we inherited from the Europeans. That's one of the things that white folks here in America inherited from their European brothers and sisters was punishment. And I'm thankful that you said that. We got to go beyond punishment because punishment does not solve the problem. Most of the people that are being punished are victims themselves. Something
right.
has happened in their lives that has caused them to do the things that they do, and they weren't protected. There was no protection for them. So at some point, we've got to develop a compassionate norm that gets to the cause of the problems that we have in this society so that we can root them out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because, I mean, we look at slavery and the stuff that's, you know, in slavery, it was legal for white folks to be pedophiles and sexual perverts and stuff as it relates to us. We had no protection under the law. Where did that energy go? That energy don't disappear because we got the Civil Rights Act or because we got the Voting Rights Act. You know, it don't just disappear because of those things. It's still within the lineages of our families, and we've got to take serious rooting that stuff out of us. Thank you so much, for Naima, for bringing this such important topic to the floor, and we need to continue to bring it forth.
Well, I have a question.
I think you should have a show with women who have been molested to talk about those things, how they deal with men in their lives now because of what happened to them in the past. Get a panel of them on maybe at some
point. I mean, we could have a whole conference about that. But I have a question for you because you said your daughter, she knows how to spot it now. Has she shared with you what are signs that you look for? I know Minister Cynthia said that what she would do is listen for, you know, things that they talked about, how they grew up, you know, maybe their relationship with their mother, that kind of thing, how she would observe how they interacted with children. Is there anything that your daughter says that she looks for specifically in the behavior of men or things that they might say that would give a hint or a clue that maybe there's something a little off about their sexual, you know, behavior or tendencies?
She probably did, but I don't have it in my mind right now what she said. But that's why I'm saying I think we should pull together these women so that they can share their insight into men. And I think Minister Cynthia said something important, that men do tell us about themselves, but we don't listen. We really don't listen. We're just looking at the man, the physicality, but we don't really take into account what they're saying. And it is important to get references from the people that we interact with. You can't just take people on face value. The school doesn't. The military doesn't. You know, you got to bring references. You got to have a resume. And we open ourselves up to people like, you know, and they're the closest to come close to us and our families, and we don't know nothing about them.
Right.
And, of course, some things show up later on. I mean, they don't show up right up front. You can live, like I live with my husband for over 15 years. That was not something that I was aware of, that I was, I know that God told me when I met him that I was to help heal him. But I didn't know what I was supposed to help heal him about, so I'm constantly trying to figure out what is that. But I didn't know nothing about sexual perversion because that didn't happen in my family. It wasn't a part of my upbringing. I was overprotected. So I didn't know. But I'm going to ask her that question and because it is important, because those are the things that we can teach from women who have been abused and what happened to them. I have a little short story. There was a woman in Mississippi, and well, she was a young girl, and this was like in the probably 20s, maybe or even earlier, 1910, something like that. And she was literate. She was a black woman in Mississippi. She was literate. She was raised by her grandmother. And she had been accepted at this all-girls prep school because of her academic achievements. And so her mother invited her to visit her in Mississippi, I mean in Jackson, and she had a new husband. And so the young girl went to visit her mother in Jackson for the summer and her stepfather. And during the course of the visit, the stepfather attempted to molest her. And she injured him. I think she pushed him out of a window or something like that. And what she did then was she ran off because she was afraid. She didn't know what was going to happen as a result of her injuring him. And he was a mulatto and a big wig in the Jackson, you know, black community. So she ran off. Now imagine this 15-year-old girl running loose in Mississippi. Beautiful woman.
Wow.
Beautiful woman. Imagine all of the abuse that she went through as a young woman with no protection anywhere. Well, eventually she met this older man, and he was like 40 years older than her, and he married her. Well, she had four children by the time they met. And then she went on and had, I think, maybe 11 more children with him. No, not 11. It was 9 more children with him because he had some children when he met her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a result of what happened to her, she became very religious, extremely religious, and she was a very, very bitter woman, very bitter. Well, this was James Bevel's mother. This is what happened to her. And the rest is history. This is history. Because one day, she came upon her daughter, who was older than Jim, having sex with him. And she, during the point of the sex act, beat him with a mule strap. These are the straps that they hold mules together.
Oh.
You know? That's what she'd use on her children. That's how bitter she was and angry. And almost beat him near death because of this.
Mm.
Well, this caused him to be frozen in time, having sex with a little girl, and having to live with the bitterness of his mother for the rest of his life. So consequently, when this happens in a person's life, what they do is they develop, sometimes what people do is, like say a child in particular, you have a main personality. So if you're being abused physically or otherwise, sometimes that personality will split off and create other personalities to be buffers for the main personality. It's called multiple personality. That's one of the names they've revised the name now. It's multiple personality disorder. Okay?
Yeah.
So the other personality, you don't know nothing about it.
Right.
The main personality never meets this personality.
Right. So you can have a personality that wasn't traumatized and can operate normally.
Right. Right. And that's what happened in his case. He created he created multiple personalities. So now he has this deviant personality because it's like a virus that's passed on at some point, you know, the sexual perversions and disorders and stuff of the clan. So consequently, who would he want to bring closure to, you know, because there's always this thing where we want to get closure, right?
Right.
So closure for him is finishing that sex act with a little girl.
Yeah.
That's closure. But now he's a grown man, and he's still seeking closure. I mean, this man had women flocking over him all the time, you know? But because of what happened when he was a child and the non-closure, he continued to seek that in his relationships, in his life. Okay? Consequently, yeah, he was able to do all the things that he did, but this personality would come out from time to time when given, you know, when it felt that it couldn't get caught. Because remember, there's always secrecy now because of the beating.
Yeah.
Sex becomes a secret act. It's not something that's open.
Right.
So the result is history, what has happened. Now, he in Virginia didn't have a statute of limitation on a felony. So my daughter was able to take him to court primarily because she wanted to protect her little sister who was still in the home with him and her and his new wife. And that was the only way that the little girl could be protected was somebody had to they wanted the maternal father and mother to take custody of the child. Well, they got temporary custody, but in order to get permanent custody, somebody had to file suit, and my daughter was the only one. But there were three other of his daughters who were also molested, not just our daughter. So consequently, you have what you have. You have a case, they said incest, but it was really rape. So because she was a child. So he was charged with incest. Now, it doesn't take away from the great works that he did, although people try to act like it does. It doesn't. Because it says, let your light so shine that men may see your good works and give glory to God. See, the good works that he did have to be attributed to God working through him in spite of
his trauma.
The trauma and the problems that he had. He's actually the poster child. He needs to be the poster person for sexual violations of children because we can see that the only reason it came to light was because he had done all these good works. But it's in everybody's family. Nobody's family is void of these sexual perversions that's been passed on from generation to generation to generation, and we point fingers. But we don't look for the cure. How do we save ourselves and our families and future generations from sexual pedophiles and perversions? It's a real problem, and we cannot afford to ignore it any longer. So, again, thank you, Naima, for this opportunity to share.
Well, thank you for sharing that story, and I think it brings to light the best way for us to handle it is not punishment. Just like, I mean, how many years did it take for them to realize alcoholism was an illness? It's an addiction of the body. It's not you're a bad person, you get drunk. You have become addicted to alcohol, and so therefore your drinking is out of control. Well, it's the same thing, a sexual trauma that creates a behavior that is harmful. It's a sickness, and all sicknesses can be healed, but punishing them doesn't make them healed. It just makes it worse. So we have to develop the compassion to look for healing rather than condemnation. That means we have to correct our own understanding of sexuality. As a people, as a nation, as a society, we are twisted in our understanding of sex. So we can't heal the traumas from sex because we are sick. We have all the shame, guilt, fear around sex, all of these stipulations about sexuality, all of this condemnation behavior, all of this shaming behavior about sex. We have to fix that in ourselves first because that's what creates the behavior that causes the trauma in our children.
And that shame opens the door for it to come into our lives because now we don't know nothing.
Right. We open the door for it to come into our lives. I've had a number of friends who've told stories about, you know, as children you're exploring, you know, bodies and things like that, and then you get caught, and then you get a beating. Now, why are parents beating you because you're 4 and 5 years old exploring the body of someone who's of sex? Why are you getting a beating? It's because of the twisted misunderstanding about sex in your parents, making it a shame, guilt, fear thing, oh, a sin and all that. All of that misunderstanding is what creates the trauma in the children. Because if you understand that children are going to be curious, rather than you beating them and inflicting your really twisted misunderstanding about your own self and your own sexuality and your own misshapen belief system, you would lovingly explain to them anatomy, explain their body parts, explain it in a way that there's no mystery about it, and don't introduce guilt, shame, and fear about sexuality to your children. They're children. They're curious. They're going to want to know. So we did that
in the beginning,
our lack of proper understanding about sex. And we have to correct that in order to get rid of the trauma that we create in our children when they do get caught exploring. And then for those who have developed the illness that has been caused by a trauma, and they're repeating behavior that was probably inflicted upon them, we have to look at healing as opposed to punishment, and just locking somebody away forever doesn't help, because then they get out, then they're still, the trauma still follows them because they're labeled, and now you're going to be treating them forever as if they're this deviant person rather than helping them heal from the sickness. And so this is why this is so self-perpetuating and spreading, because we haven't dealt with it in the right way. So we have to address it. We have to change the way we deal with it. I don't know what happened with the Bill Cosby situation, but I'm sure if there was some exploration, something happened in his life, you know, because he did all these brilliant things.
Right.
And for us to act like, well, you know, but none of that happened because he did this with these women. Well, you know, that was something that is a manifestation of something else that was unseen that happened to him.
Criminalizing
him does not fix the problem, and it does a disservice to all of the good things that happened, all the people whose lives he helped, and, I mean, money that he gave to all these institutions. None of that goes away. So we need to stop criminalizing people and act as if the good they did didn't happen. I mean, your husband was a major contributor to the civil rights movement. That's a historic fact. It doesn't get erased because there was a part of his life that was in pain, and we need to see things in a different light as opposed to criminalizing someone and erasing their good name because there was a part of them that was wounded and didn't get an opportunity to heal.
That's definitely
a point we
must make. And we inherited that from England, you know. That's what we inherited. We didn't take their government, or you know, we didn't let them rule over us, but we took, you know, how their jails and their insane asylums were filled because they were punishing people.
And we just inherited
that from them. They didn't look for the cause. What is the cause? Why is this person committing this crime, so-called crime? It's really not a crime. It's an illness. It's just like locking people up for cancer instead of finding a cure for cancer.
That is it. Well, let me bring another person into our conversation. We got our sister of the microphone from down there in Florida, area code 407. Thank you for joining us, Beata.
Well, Grand Rising Sisters, and thank you, Maika, for sharing all that history of a person we need to know and we need to love and respect and have compassion on, because it's a complex issue, as she's just revealed. It goes back to mothers, grandmothers, and even in the womb, the experience that a mother has while carrying a child affects their behavior. So I'm so glad that that Maika shared that, because that's where we can have some compassion instead of criminalizing behavior. So I'm so glad that you brought this subject up. My experience is that my daughter-in-law, after she divorced my son, she brought a man into the house. I don't know if he's sleeping in the house or not, but he's in the life of my grandchildren, which was, at first, I was a little bothered about it, but I have no control over it. So I just accept her behavior. And when you ask the question, should the man be in the life of children when there's a single mother, I think that's, as one of the comments says, it's a very conscious decision that the mother and the man should make about what is best for the children. Because these single women can be so selfish. I need a man. Well, you need to, at this point, your children go through a divorce, especially at a young age. It's so important to be concerned about their mental and emotional health. It's the woman should be more concerned about the health of the children. But with these days, with narcissism abound and self-centeredness, that's probably not going to happen as much as we like. But that's what I think is the answer, is that it should be a conscious decision about what is best for the children. And real quick, tomorrow I'm going to be asking the question, do you need a chiropractor to have good health? Because that's something that we can bring into our life and not at a large cost. So that's my show tomorrow, as well as all the health news I've been reading. We're going to bring some truth to the news. So thank you, Naima. Have a beautiful day. And Maika, thanks. Nice to hear your voice again. And everybody have a beautiful day.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Tune in tomorrow. Health and Well-Being with Viata. And do you need a chiropractor? Well, I definitely have one, because I keep wrecking my back. And so every now and then I got to go and see my chiropractor. Yes, we need to know about some natural ways of healing. Thank you all for sharing their thoughts. We appreciate you. And, yes, we do need to look at how to heal the hurt and not simply criminalize behavior. One thing that was said about the slave experience, the reason why – shiploads of African women were brought over here to be abused was because of the extreme shame, guilt, fear that about its sexuality. And so we became the people that they can enact what they desire freely without guilt. So that is part of the legacy of America. We have to heal the hurt that we have caused and we have experienced as a people. And when we do that, then we can rebuild healthy relationships. So thank you all for joining us. Our global family, we say
Ashanti, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakor, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.